Now, this is Box to Box with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley.
Oh, what a goal!
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
They're just around the corner.
Absolutely fantastic!
Hello and welcome to Box, the show that is everything football on Macquarie Radio, NTS News Talk Sport. You're with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley. Mark Van Aken with First Edition News in a minute. But as always, there's plenty on in the world game every single week. But the biggest news of all this week is the imminent announcement that the MCG will be hosting the Superclásico de las Américas, the ultimate heavyweight football clash between Brazil and Argentina in June next year. To tell us all about that, our friend Ray Gatt from The Australian. Looking forward to that chat. Then our man Dean Hennessy will go through all the A-League ground in detail, and we'll wrap up the first hour talking to the Sydney Morning Herald's Michael Cockerell about his article pushing the Tasmanian A-League bid, and a general chat around the expansion debate as it continues to bubble along. In the second hour, as always, we'll kick off with second edition news, then 4-4-2 in the World Games, Paul Williams from Singapore, to talk to us about the tricky Asian Champions League draw for the Western Sydney Wanderers and Adelaide. Then Dino returns with all the international news and Mark with stoppage time. Edge, the Superclásico. It doesn't get any bigger than that in any sport around the world, does it, mate?
No, it's pretty big, but I'm going to take a controversial stand here and say I'll just be interested to see whether the big names arrive on the basis of their heavy schedules and South American qualification at that time will have been run and won, and they will have had a huge, huge workload. So interesting to see. Wouldn't be the first time Victoria's been left red-faced, having paid large sums of money for big brands, and then the stars don't arrive. So it'll be interesting to see how.
Well, it's a fair question. It's not just Victoria, but every state that's hosted some of these big matches have been stumped from time to time. But
so the jury's out for me. But it is super exciting news if the reports
but
are true.
But look, obviously the Messi Neymar head to head is the one that we'd love to see. Will we see it? We'll find out.
Absolutely. Hey, g'day, Mark.
G'day, boys.
How are you?
I'm very good. Look, with that, the reality is, as you know, there's a contract in place, and if the right players don't turn up, then they don't get paid. The federations, simple as that. So,
Campbell being involved, he's no dummy. However, for example,
the ICC, which he runs this year, was a bit of a flop.
Well, that's what I was going to go with.
Up. Guess what? The clubs didn't get paid properly. They didn't deliver.
That's a fact.
Simple as that. Yes. So. Yeah, and we know the Brazilian Federation, they've done this before. I mean, there was that classic time about 20 years ago when they were supposed to bring out Ronaldo and he didn't turn up because Brazil had booked two friendlies on the one day and we didn't get the right team down here. Ronaldinho was here, but
it was free. Yeah, IMG carried the can for that one, yeah. I'm just interested to know. I just think the soccer, the football community that we live and breathe in, and I think we've become very mature about these types of things now, and we're a little bit suspect about is it going to be the real deal?
The good news with that is, though, one of the teams is being marked to stick around and play a friendly against Socceroos, which is great lead into the Confederations Cup.
All right, what do you got for us, brother?
Mate, the A-League clubs Adelaide United and Western Sydney have received tough draws in the group stages of the AFC Champions League. Reigning A-League champs Adelaide have been placed in Group H and will face current ACL champions Zhongbuk Hyundai and Chinese Super League club Jiangsu Suning, with the latter setting up a clash with Socceroo Trent Sainsbury, along with a playoff winner. The Wanderers are in Group F alongside Korean team FC Seoul, a second Japanese side, and a playoff winner. As you touched on, we'll talk to Paul Williams, an Asian football expert, a little bit later in the show about
this. Looking forward to that, yeah.
Are we going to see Turn Sainsbury against some... just an in-joke for our listeners playing against his Aussie teammates?
Absolutely. Anyway, and look, just quickly, too, one thing to bring up with Gatti later on the show, too, is David Davidovich did write a yarn in the Herald Sun a couple of days later, flagging a couple of issues about that game that it's nowhere near confirmed. There's been a lot of objections from clubs, which Michael sort of touched on as well, but watch this space anyway.
Interesting.
Now, a bit of a feel-good story, which I don't get too often in football, unfortunately, but a five-year-old Afghan boy who captured hearts all over the world in his Lionel Messi bag shirt has finally met his hero. Young Murtaza Ahmadi was an online sensation in January when a picture of him wearing a plastic bag with Messi scrawled on the back was circulated around the web. The Barcelona superstar sent a signed Argentina shirt to the child earlier this year, but has now gone a step further and met his biggest fan. While in Doha for a money-spinning friendly with Barca against Al Ahly, Messi posed for a picture with the youngsters. There we go.
Did you see the vision of that? Little fella just didn't want to leave.
Yeah,
that was lovely.
That's right. He was on the pitch, wasn't he? And he just wouldn't go. Anyway.
Good stuff.
Hey, this is one for Michael. Ambitious South Melbourne have upped the ante in their bid to land an A-League spot by locking down a European marquee player and star coach, both of whom could be announced as early as next week, while the signings of the duo are dependent on the former National League Giants being granted entry to an expanded 12-team A-League when FFA makes its decision in the new year. The investment is a testament to South Melbourne's determination to make sure they are one of the two chosen. I don't really get this because...
PR stunt. Forget it. Move on.
How can they announce them next week? If and they don't know if they're in the league for 3 months.
Yeah, but it's contingent on them getting in the league, the announcement. So,
which player signs that contract?
At least they're in the media.
Please.
They're getting stories.
It's good to know. Chris Taylor knows he's in the the gun if they get the A-League, that he's definitely going to be considered for the job. Anyway, he may well be at Wellington Phoenix by then.
It's a gigantic PR campaign. That's all.
Okay. What can you do?
All style, no substance.
Oh, yeah.
All right, you made your point.
Yep. Wellington Phoenix's search for a new manager has seen them speak to South Melbourne coach that manager spoke of, Chris Taylor, in a shock move to replace him anyway. Now, I'm just reading someone else's copy here. I don't think it's a shock move at all. Anyway, he's coached in the Victorian National Premier League, blooding Kiwis Luke Adams and club captain Michael Eger, which has attracted the interest of the Phoenix's owners. This is according to Daniel Garbutt, Fox Sports. More than qualified for an A-League job, Chris Taylor.
Yeah, we'll talk to Dino. He's a good mate of Chris.
I think it would be a great appointment and a real fillip for those local coaches who ply their trade in the NPL tiers around the country. He's been a long, long respected coach in that competition. It'd be great to see him get a gig. He's a good bloke too. And a Leicester fan, so you should like him.
There you go.
There you go. Just hasn't done so well in the FFA Cup the last couple of years.
No, he hasn't been in the FFA Cup, has he?
Well, he's been in it, mate.
Yeah, but not at the pointy end.
Correct. Anyway, Uruguay, China's out of the game, boys. China's out of the game. Oh, wow.
China.
There we go. Hang on that. Maybe you can put a toilet in your club rooms now. Uruguayan striker Edinson Cavani could be on the verge of a move to the cashed-up Chinese Super League with the newly promoted Tianjin Quanjing keen for his signature. France Football has reported a 50 million euro deal will be offered to the Paris Saint-Germain star. The 29-year-old has been arguably in career-best form this season for the French champs, netting 22 goals, boys, 22 goals in 21 appearances with PSG in a three-horse race with leaders Nice and second-place Monaco for the League One title.
Not a bad replacement for Ibrahimovic.
Tell you what. And also, actually, I haven't got it here on the rundown, but there's also been rumours this week of Oscar heading to China for $101 million.
Yeah,
the Hulk get paid... Sorry, the Hulk... He's pretty average in my view. He gets paid £340,000 a week. I mean, even in Premier League standards, that is a ridiculous amount of money. £340,000 a week. So,
wouldn't you love to see that pay packet hit?
But
your bank
you think about it, you're running an
A
League club with your salary cap's $3.5 million a year. Timmy Cahill is getting booed because he's on $4 million. Yeah. Look at these guys.
Hey, I was moonlighting a little bit like Rob does, listening to a bit of...
Smash the mic there for you.
Smash the mic, sorry about that. I was moonlighting like Rob does, listening to a bit of overnight action from London, and they were complaining... I found this really interesting. They were complaining about the Chinese Super League and the amount of money they were paying players because... some Premier League clubs might lose players to China.
Well, they already have.
They were talking about it being an institutionalised development and how the Premier League and the English football would be worse off for it. I mean, that is unbelievable. They were complaining about not having enough money in the Premier League. Blimey. That's what I say.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're
blimey.
Right. They're right, but tough. That's the world. What can you do?
But they're just... As
Mehmet Djokovic would say, what can you do? What can you do?
What can you do, mate? Okay, give us something small for the end, mate.
Gary Neville has hit back at Jurgen Klopp as the war of words over criticism of Liverpool. Here's Dino in the background. Liverpool keeper Loris Karius rumbles on. The Reds boss launched a stinging attack on the Neville brothers for their part in the media hype surrounding the goalkeeping situation at Anfield. Karius made another mistake against West Ham on the last weekend after his howler cost Liverpool in injury time against Bournemouth the previous weekend. And the keeper has come under... Anyway, what a love here. So Klopp hit back at Neville and saying he was obviously a rubbish coach. He lasted, six months in Spain, whatever. But I've got to say, as much as I'm a Liverpool man and I can't stand the Neville brothers, the great reply from Neville was on Twitter, in fact, Haha, I'm not a chef, but I know a good steak.
But then, in the ultimate irony, Klopp then drops Karius anyway.
So no, that's the thing. This is a stupid thing. Klopp comes out, defends him. That's great. And then he, yeah, exactly right.
Yeah.
Puts Mignolet in. Mignolet played quite well. Mm. And you're probably not going to see him for the rest of the season. So you can't sort of have a go at them and then go, yeah, by the way, yeah, I acknowledge the guy's crap.
Well done, Marco. Okay, after the break, Ray Gatt, he's going to talk to us about that story. Will the Super Classico happen at the G? We'll find out next on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
They're just around the corner.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
This is Box to Box, of course, on NTS News Talk Sport. Now, when this next story broke, it spread like wildfire. Brazil v Argentina at the MCG next year. It looks like it's actually going to happen. Ray Gatt, welcome to Box, the Australian chief football writer. Is it true? Is it going to happen?
Great to be on the show, guys, again. Yes, my sources told me it's definitely a goer. In June, the Victorian government, via their Visit Victoria department, will make an announcement in the next couple of weeks, I'm told, and it's exciting news. It's massive news. It's fantastic, not just for Australian soccer, but for Victoria as well, because the eyes of the football world will be on that state. And yeah, it's, as I said, it's fantastic.
The Super Clásico de las Américas, right? It has a lovely ring to it.
I'm very impressed with your pronunciation, mate.
Thanks, mate. So, look, the big question on all of these ones, Ray, is we've all been blowtorched too many times to not be a little cynical about whether yep. they're going to turn up with the players. There's famous stories over the years from international and club football alike where, you know, we've been tempted to buy tickets and people hand over the cash only to find out that second string teams are. So what protection do we have in place to ensure that that we're going to get the players that we want to see?
Yeah, well, look, I understand that the negotiations only took place because of the guarantees that the the biggest names, obviously Neymar for Brazil and Messi for Argentina, will be there. Look, neither will have any commitments because. At that time, because neither country has made the Confederations Cup, which is in Moscow a couple of weeks or later, and they've got no other playing commitments. So yeah, look, it's a massive situation because a lot of money involved. So you know, the government, the Vic government, wouldn't be going ahead with this unless they had certain guarantees regarding players turning up. So. This is not something they can muck around with. And, you're right, we've been burned quite a few times over the years with second-rate teams coming here. I think the International Champions Cup earlier this year in Melbourne...
It was a bit of a fizzer, wasn't it, Ray?
Yeah, it was. This is a different situation. And, I think we can be safe in assuming that they will bring most of their high-class players.
What can you tell us about the man behind the negotiations, Bart Campbell? He's a part owner in Melbourne Storm. He was very prominent in the transaction that happened between the old Melbourne Heart owners and the Citigroup, as I understand it. He's becoming a bit of a shaker and mover in these types of things, isn't he?
Yeah, look, he is an unknown, very mysterious guy. Shuns publicity, shuns the media as much as he can. A Kiwi entrepreneur. So, yeah, he did play a major role in the Heart City transfer. And, look, obviously he's a very cluey sort of a person and he's got the right connections. And, he's done a great job. I think he was involved in the international championship.
Yeah, he is
well,
too.
He's
definitely leading the charge on these types of football events. I mean, the devil's advocate and the cynical people on social media. I had actually had a look at some South American people I know who had some strong opinions on this. They said that these two teams play each other up to four times every year. And that these sort of friendlies that are, you know, outside of the Copa America tournaments and the qualification for World Cups, they sort of don't take it seriously. It's a bit of just a cash grab. I mean, can we be that cynical about this type of event?
Well, Look, that's a tough one. Those guys are out of season as well, and they'd be looking for a break. And it is what it is. It is a cash.
It's a friendly, isn't it? And, at the end of the day, it's a friendly. Yeah.
It is a friendly, and there's no bones about it. But when these two teams go on the field, in all honesty, I mean, they'll be trying their hearts out to win. I mean, Brazil don't like being beaten by Argentina and vice versa.
No, that's right.
Look, as I said, a lot of those guys will be on their breaks, so they won't want to get injured or whatever, and they want to be with their families as soon as possible. But they understand that they've got commitments to their country, and money does speak, doesn't it? So I imagine some of those players will be getting a cut of the money as well. So.
Like they need it, Ray. This is box to box on NTS.
A little bit of spending money for the holidays, isn't it?
I think absolutely. Both of them have some tax bills, don't they? Neymar and Messi both have tax bills, I think.
Exactly.
This is
box to box on NTS News Talk Sport. Yes, we are talking to Ray Gatt, the chief football writer for the Australian newspaper, and we are talking about the Super Clásico de las Américas scheduled for the MCG next year between Brazil and Argentina. And we expect to see some of these big names like Messi and Neymar, Sergio Aguero, Pablo Zabaleta, Gonzalo Higuain, Javier Mascherano, Philippe Coutinho, Roberto Firmino, David Luiz. I mean, they just roll off the tongue. So if you're up at the Paris end of Collins Street looking at the Prada store or some of those other swanky brands that you wonder who buys stuff from there, well, I'm telling you, there'll be a few brides of these gentlemen who will have some coin to splash
around,
about.
Exactly. And look, as you said, it's just not about Messi and Neymar. There's some outstanding players there. Mm. Liverpool fans will be looking forward to seeing Coutinho and Firmino.
Yes.
So, they're all good quality players. Yeah.
And to take that count of view as well, I know Edge, talks about the friendly nature, and it is a football friendly, and they might play each other four times a year, but they don't play each other four times a year in the Southern Hemisphere. They've never played in Australia, and
they do play in the Southern Hemisphere, but not Australia.
Yeah, sorry, yes, sorry, corrected. No, it's a good point. It's a very good point. the Asian region, I should describe it better, and look. To be honest, I think we want to see a friendly game, because if it's being played the cat and mouse sort of nature of a must win match, then the likelihood is you're not going to see a hell of a lot of entertainment. So I want to see those futsal skills of these guys doing ridiculous things that we don't get to see them do very often.
Ray, for insiders who love this sort of stuff, I mean, it's always good to see a bit of needle between the Victorian and New South Wales governments. I noticed you reached out to Destination New South Wales to see what they had to say about this, and they pretty much gave you nothing.
Exactly, because my understanding is they were in for it, but the Victorian government got in under their guard, and I think there might be a few little red faces at Destination New South Wales, and but it's good to have those two biting at the bit, to stage the events like this, because it adds a bit more spice to it, and it makes them more determined to outdo each other the next time around. So, as I said, I don't think Destination New South Wales are too chuffed with what's happened.
And especially, I imagine Western Sydney Wanderers fans were very interested to note that Damien de Bowen has popped up at Visit Victoria. Hmm. Even more reason for them to hate him.
Curious.
Well, exactly, yeah. He was appointed, I think, in October, and... I'd imagine there'd be a big smile on Damien's face over the last couple of days.
And the Victorian Sports Minister John Aaron as well, just quietly, they'll be grinning like the proverbial cat that got the cream.
Yeah, he's a massive football fan.
He is,
yes. And he loves his football, and you can tell. So, it was a massive incentive for him to try and put one over New South Wales in this one.
Yeah, well, there's nothing like a politician that has a win and a story to tell. We might have to get him on Box to Box next week. I don't think we'll have to try that hard to get John Aaron on.
No, he'd be fantastic. But listen, the other point is, and you haven't mentioned yet, is that one of those teams will be playing the
Socceroos, which is probably the more important one, isn't it? Because it'll be a lead into the Confederations Cup for the Socceroos.
Yeah, and Ange is desperate for a lead-up game, so it doesn't matter who we play, Brazil or Argentina. It's, either one will be fine by the public, and there'll be a new sellout as well. So,
will that be at the MCG as well, or is there an opportunity for Tourism New South Wales to save some face here?
No, I think the logistics means that it'll be at the MCG. So somewhere between June 9 and, say, June 12, you'll be seeing Brazil-Argentina and Australia v Argentina or Brazil.
What a month for Socceroos fans, Ray, because we'll get to see the Socceroos v Brazil or Argentina, and then we play Germany, we play Chile, and the African champions in the Confederations Cup. I mean, how good's that?
And then they're going to come back and the end of World Cup qualifying.
That's right. And then we've got the big blockbuster in August in Japan. I'll tell you what, it's pretty huge.
Exciting times. And don't forget, the Socceroos will be playing Saudi Arabia in Adelaide on June 8th before these in the World Cup qualifier. So a feast of football. It never stops.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully it's just going to be a feast that ends with everybody giving a very satisfied burp when we qualify for Moscow, for Russia.
That's a good way of putting it.
Hey, Ray, Merry Christmas, mate.
Thanks for everything this year, Ray. It's been awesome to have you on board.
No, it's a pleasure. Any time, guys. Anything to push our great game.
Excellent, mate. And to your family as well, mate. Have a great time, Ray.
And same to you, guys. Thanks.
After the break, our man Dino Hennessy, he's going to come in. We're going to talk some A-League on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
The Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
They're just around the corner.
And this could be the most crucial
this
goal
is
of all.
Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport on digital radio, streaming through whatever app you prefer. Perhaps you're listening on the podcast on boxtoboxnts.com.au. Now it's time for our former Notts County man, the 250-game veteran of the Victorian Premier League and Hume City coach, our very own Dean Hennessy. How are you, mate?
I'm good. How are you, Rob?
Yeah, good, mate. It's been a good week. It's always interesting, you know, when the new chapter of another week opens in the world of football. You just don't know what you're going to get, and inevitably we get a hell of a lot. But on the domestic scene, we've got a big round coming up.
We have.
Yeah, just but just briefly, your highlights from last weekend.
Well, I suppose the first game that we're actually going to talk about is the Newcastle Jets. I mean, what a great win last week at Perth. I thought they were really, really good value for their win. I don't know whether you talk about turning the corner, but I reckon it's a turn of the corner moment. I think all of a sudden now they went there. They were the best team from the very, very first minute to the 90th, and that's the first time I've seen Newcastle Jets in the time, I would say, in the last 2-3 years that have been so forceful away from home. And I think it's encouraging. And playing Adelaide as well, which is coming up.
Especially, Dino, because they were so poor the week before, Newcastle Jets.
They were.
It was a massive turnaround.
It was, and that's what I'm saying. It was like a bit of a shock to the system. I thought
to lose 2-0 at home one week and then go away to Perth.
Yeah, unbelievable. Yeah. But they were good value for it. I mean, it could have been a lot more. And yeah, you know, the boy Naboo, I mean, he was always touch and go with Victory. I suppose expectations at Victory are really, really high.
Always liked him at Victory, though.
Yeah,
he seemed to get the job done whenever
too.
He played, but he was in a team that had too many stars and there just wasn't enough room for him.
Yeah, look, he played in the NPL and he was, you know, he was a good player, you know, as is Jai Ingham. And, you know, we obviously had him and he's gone on to bigger and better things. And, you know, you really enjoy everybody that, you know, goes from an NPL status to an A-League status. But Newcastle Jets, for me, almost are the real deal. I mean, they were really good. Now, can
almost
they back
good
it
things
up
for tonight?
Look, I think so. I mean, Adelaide,
just before tonight, no, I want to bring up one item from last week. There's been a little bit of discussion during the week. Rob, you and I had a bit of a chat about it, and that's the theatrics of the South Americans in the league, and Fernando in particular. I know Friday night, it was a whole week ago, but it was a special game, Sydney and Melbourne City. I thought it was a very high-standard game.
Yeah.
But the theatrics of the diving, I mean,
you know what I was more disappointed in? I can cop him doing that because he needs a clip over the ear and to be told. But when John Van Skip defended him, it was just gross hypocrisy because one week he's all over the opposition, and the next week, you know, he hasn't got the kahunas to come out and have a
Dino,
crack at his own player.
Which camp are you in? Should Fernando be castigated for not adhering to the Australian football culture, the way we play the game here, or is simulation, as they call it in the classics, is simulation just part of the world game, and that South Americans and some other continental European nations, you know, our friends in Italy, for example, I know we've got plenty of Italian heritage Australians listening, but they were known for diving for a long time, weren't they? So
I'm pretty firm on it.
Which camp are you in?
Well, I don't know how to dive. I've never dived ever in my life. Don't know what to do, how to do it. So for me, don't dive.
I think you're just being the devil's advocate because you agree with that.
I do. But I did. I found John Van Skip's defence of it, it was really, really interesting. It's like
cringeworthy.
It's like a real estate agent trying to sell a dog of an apartment on auction day.
I'll tell you, it was late and I'm thinking
about, oh, look, you know, but forget about the dive. What about the first penalty? You can't push him in the face. I mean,
well, I'll tell you now, if a player of mine dives and it affects the game, I will come out and talk about it. And I won't be defending my own player. I'll defend him as an individual because I know him, because obviously I've signed him. I work with him every day, which I do. But I'll tell you what, I will not defend him diving. I don't want people to dive. Just don't dive. You know, it's just, I hated it. Well, I've never done it, so I don't know really how it works.
Well, our great mate and contributor, John Cosimino, he didn't leave anyone wondering what he thought.
Yeah, well, I'm with...
Name and shame them, he thinks.
Yeah, well, I'm with Cosy. You know, we're maybe old school. Yeah. You know, we just don't dive.
Anyway, let's we've got the Newcastle fans are listening to us as they're driving to the stadium tonight. Buoyant after a massive win in Perth. But what about the Adelaide Reds? You know, Adelaide United, I mean...
Reds. How far back are we going now?
Yeah, that's going back a while. But no, what about, we were all excited about them last week because they were about to begin their, or the week before last, about to begin their run after their win, and it was quite a spooky alignment with last year.
We were all excited, weren't we?
It was the same time of year they got the win, and then they've petered out with a...
Well, for the first seven rounds, I never really discussed them. I said, don't worry about them.
I'm off them now.
They haven't turned the corner.
I'm off them.
I think it comes back to, and I've said this week in, week out, that they are devoid of replacing what they lost last year. And until they do, I don't know where the window comes in and when they can bring people in, but they haven't replaced. And if you don't replace and don't improve, you go backwards, and that's where they are. And they won't turn this around. They will not make the finals. I've put it out really early. So for me, very, very simple, Newcastle Jets will win again. And I tell you what, if they win again and grab those 3 points, all of a sudden then they're in contention.
And Dino, we're
really
going to talk to Paul Williams next hour about the Asian Champions League draw. They are in a parlous state when it comes to the domestic competition, let alone going to the ACL.
They've had a tough draw as well. I mean, it's not an easy draw. Yeah.
All right, so we think that the Jets are good things then.
I think we all think the Jets are good things, but Nigel Bogart's back in the team this week after a long time. Do you rate him?
Yeah, I do. I think he's pretty consistent. You know, I think he is the most yellow carded player that's played in the A League. Is
no,
it?
He loves
a yellow card.
We haven't heard the slice of cheese very much this year in our show, but he's one that likes a slice of cheese. But would you change the team after last week?
No, I wouldn't.
I mean, because it's Mark Jones said earlier in the week that he was going to bring him back into the team straight away.
That's up to Mark. I mean, Mark knows his players better than I do. If a team that plays for me wins convincingly and plays like they did, doesn't change, you know. And that's, even when the big names come back, you just go, well, hold on, this is the way football is. It's not about 11 players, it's about 20 players or however many they've got.
Well, I hope there's plenty of traffic. I hope there's a traffic jam out the front of the Newcastle Stadium, because I think they're good things tonight.
Yeah, me too. I'm excited for them. I mean, obviously we've got friends there, as we know, with Laurie, and I'm pleased for him that the things are turning. But, you know, it's that those 3 points, all of a sudden now, they're really going to, if they do get them, they're going to push right into the... You know, into the mix.
So. Okay. Another triple header tomorrow night, tomorrow afternoon.
Evening.
It's going to be good. And it's a bumper triple header, this one, too, starting with the rejuvenated Wellington Phoenix against the hapless Wanderers.
Well, I had a little chat with my friend Chris Taylor, who's now been actually touted for the job.
Does he give himself a chance?
It's not fair on there. I shouldn't say that. But he liked the job.
If it
became available, it will be his entry into the A-League. And I don't think they come very often, do they? But there's only 10 teams. So,
and brief background on Chris for our listeners who aren't aware of his bio.
South Melbourne, teammates of mine way back when, in the 90s, play together. Most probably the funniest player to ever play with. Just constantly commentated the whole through the 90 minutes. Took the mick out of so many players. Great character, but really successful as a coach.
Importantly, though, Rob, I don't think any club in the entire Victorian football community, where Chris has obviously been plying his trade, I think he would have coached up to 3 or 4 Premier League clubs over the last 15 to 20 years.
Yeah,
he's been a long time, a long time.
Big Knights, man.
But I don't think anyone would have a bad word to say about Chris Taylor. He's respected and loved, genuinely respected and loved.
No, he is. Look, he's a fabulous lad. And
I think he's a great candidate.
And it'd be interesting if he gets a little sniff. And if he does, I think he'll do quite well. You know, he's very
that space. Wellington Wanderers, we're going to move it along.
Well, I think if they win this, the caretakers keep the job for the end of the year, because they won last week really convincingly.
Western Sydney, for me, they're the mojo's returning.
Jeez, not after last week.
How did you see that?
No, I reckon the mojo is going to return.
Tell you what, that's some mojo you have to look for there. That's digging really deep for mojo. For me, Wellington will win this.
Yep,
I think the new guys, all, which are the existing staff that was with Ernie Merrick, I think they'll win. I think Western Wanderers.
Okay, well, it's just predicting what we're going to consider to be an upset because they're away. Now the derby, the City v Victory. Maybe a lockout at Amy Park. There is a lot of talk already this week around it. That is going to be...
I only just got our tickets, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, really, really scraped.
I've had people asking for tickets all week. And for some of them, I haven't been able to look after. And that tells you how popular a match is when people are hunting tickets and you can't find them.
It's good, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I can't remember ever like that was the case, ever. Mm. You know, so I think football's certainly in this town's taken really, really to grips. I mean, these derbies are good.
This Christmas derby is a good one because you're right, Rob. Everyone's so busy around their Christmas activities, you know, winding up work for the year, celebrations, that bang, this game arrives. Mm. And at this time of the year, where they are on the table, plus the Tim Cahill factor result last
time. And the
time.
Fact that Victory have got the game in hand as well.
It's a massive
Oh, look, it is. And who loves a derby? I mean, everybody does. You know, all around the world, the derbies are big, you know, for those particular cities.
And it's good, isn't it, when you're just guessing, really? I mean, one can confidently say that either side's going to win right now.
I think for the first time, I know City did well last year, but really doing well this year. I think for the first time now, it's really, really quite equal. And it's really hard to pick. And I think it's the team that shows up, the team that deals with it. So far, Melbourne City have been the better side in the derbies. But look, you know, you keep slagging me every week.
You always
pick Victory.
Well, you were right last week.
The reason I pick Victory is because I actually think Victory are a good side. Mm. I really do. I actually think they're a decent side. But City are good as well.
I thought it was just because your son's on the extended roster.
Certainly not on the roster, okay, no. So, he has not touched the soil for at least 6 months. So, he's certainly not on the radar.
Dino, your Victory...
I won't go Victory this way. I think it'll be a draw. I think it'll be tight affair. I think there's a lot to play for.
I'm going to surprise Dino here. Victory surprised me last week. Mm-hmm. I didn't think they had that in. Didn't have that in them. Mm-hmm. So I think they're going to win Victory. I think they're going to upset Melbourne City, who are due for a derby.
And I'm sticking with my selection for the double at the beginning of the year. I'm going to choose.
Just a funny note. I can't remember what I saw. It was on social media, but we'd like to play you every week about the Western Wanderers.
Okay,
to play you every week.
All right, guys. There's a couple of games left. Come on, let's get on to the late match tomorrow night.
Briefly. Look, I think Perth were poor last week. Sydney FC, maybe, you know, a bit fortunate, unfortunate. I think Sydney FC will win this, but it'll be a tough game. Perth away is always hard, but I'll give it Sydney.
Sydney FC with a better team in a very good standard game last week. They'll beat Perth.
Perth to bounce back in the upset of the round for me. And the Sunday game is the Mariners v Brisbane. Mariners, you just can't pick them, can you? They'll flatter to deceive 1 week and then get their backsides walloped the next.
Brisbane were really good last week, Rob. Really good. In 4-0, that was even flattering. So for me, Brisbane, good side. And, you know, if they do get the 3 points, all of a sudden they're right in contention. Could possibly go to second.
Okay, Brisbane just win that
one. I'm with you, Dean.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Dino, you're going to be around in the next hour to talk Europe. Thank you for that, mate. After this break, though, Mike Cockerell, he's going to be on the phone to talk to us about the latest A-League expansion news, in particular, his article on the Tassie bid.
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
They're just around the corner.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, this is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport on digital radio, streaming via whatever app you like, or perhaps you're listening to the podcast on boxtoboxnts.com.au. Now, when Michael Cockerell writes, football people pay attention, and when he pushed the Tasmanian A-League bid this past week, it more than raised a few eyebrows to chat to us about it and expansion in general. Good to have you back on the show, Michael.
Always a pleasure, guys. You've pumped me up again. I feel embarrassed, but there you go.
We love you on this program, Michael Cockerell.
No, mate, you've earned it, mate. It's, but hey, we like Tasmania, and as I think you described, the Taswegians are like koala bears. Everybody loves them. And there's a bit of banter between the North and the South, which we'll go to this conversation. But are they finally going to get their wish?
I can't say with any great confidence they will, because obviously at the end of the day, that's up to the FFA board. And, you know, there are certain issues around Tasmania that people maybe aren't convinced about. Fundamentally, I think the debate about expansion is crystallising this, really. Do we want regional teams or not? I think that's really the first point the FFA board has to figure out. And if we do want regional teams, and it's probably no secret that I'm a fan of them, then Tasmania, to me, is definitely the head of the queue.
Well, in your article, you wrote this little snapshot. There's no feasibility study required. It was done 5 years ago. No letters of support needed from key levels of government. That's been done. No due diligence required. The major investors have already been involved in the A-League. No need to find a home ground, North Hobart Oval. No search for a training ground. It's been arranged. And if this bid came, say, as you point out, from Southern Sydney, the FFA would be biting their arm off.
Well, that, again, comes back to my point. So if a bid is so good, you know, the issue then becomes the strategy. And the strategy of the FFA is something we don't know about. We talk about, well, David Gallop talks about fishing where the fish are. We know they want more derbies in big cities, you know, and all the rest of it. So, you know, the point here is, do they open their minds, do they open their eyes and just go, well, this bid is so good that we really have to consider it? And what I actually wrote last weekend was probably more to the point, which is, you know, there are issues around this bid that are bigger and broader for the game than just Tasmania. I mean, we have a chance here as a code to really get one up on the AFL, which I think is an opportunity you don't get very often.
Mm-hmm.
We have a chance here to add a stadium to the portfolio of stadiums in Australia in a place that we don't have one, which I think is obviously really important as well. So there are issues around this bid that are bigger than just Tasmania and are broader, and the game needs these sort of improvements. So that's the sort of thing the FFA have got to deliberate on. You know, they're talking about a strategy in February. You know, I don't know whether that's a delaying tactic or not. I sometimes think it is. And I know Tasmania have pushed very hard for next season, and I understand why. The other part of the bid is the politics. We have, you know, people like the Prime Minister mentioning it in federal parliament. So. And that's something the game hasn't had, which is political patronage. So, you know, for whatever reason, maybe luck, maybe by design, this Tasmanian bid has brought a lot of things to the table that the game as a whole needs. Forget it's Tasmania. Just look at it in that context.
Mike, one of the things that I'm really struggling to understand is why the FFA leaves this vacuum of any substantive long-term plan for the expansion of the league. I mean, people like you and us and you know, passionate football fans and passionate football stakeholders like Harry Stamoulis and Robert Beltecchi, who are behind the Tasmanian bid, it just seems to me there is a public vacuum around the direction and leadership of the future expansion of the A-League, which is quite frustrating.
You're 100% right there. Absolutely right. And in that vacuum, of course, you get all sorts of discussions and agendas and theories and projects getting up in a sort of in a haze, if you like. That's a better way of putting it. It is frustrating. I don't know that, you know, the FFA, again, I go back to the point, they say they want to come up with a clear, detailed strategy on expansion by February. Well, they pretty well already have one. I don't know what the, you know, I don't know what we need to know about expansion that we don't know already. in my view, and I had a long and fairly passionate discussion with about this with someone just this week, when a licence changes hands in the A-League, as it has done in multiple occasions over the last X amount of years, that effectively is a due diligence criteria-based process.
Yep.
What do we need to change? Did Martin Lee, excuse me, who just bought the Newcastle Jets, did he have an easier ride to get that licence than Robert Beltecchi and Harry Stamoulis? I don't think so. It's just as robust, the process of exchanging licences, as it is creating a new one. So why are we waiting? I mean, I don't believe in rushing into things, and I don't believe Tasmania deserve a free ride at all. But I think the biggest problem for the FFA is understanding the mood of the game, and the mood right now is very, very strong towards expansion, and the opportunity in Tasmania is very, very good right now. In 12 months, 18 months' time, maybe a lot of those factors I talked about around this bid won't be there.
Yeah, this is Box to Box on NTS News Talksport. We're talking to the Sydney Morning Herald's Michael Cockrell about the Tasmanian bid, and the point you make or made earlier at the opportunity to get a jump on the AFL, we explored that with Tim Lane, who is the one of the most esteemed Australian sports broadcasters, of course, and we had Tim on the program to contrast his knowledge of the AFL, because you know he self confessed he's not steeped in footballing, not law, but he certainly was well aware as a proponent of an AFL licence in Tasmania that this was a real opportunity for football to get the jump on the AFL and to take the lead on this story and create something rather than, you know, timidly go into what they believe will be the easy fix of Southern Sydney and one or two others.
Yeah, that again comes back to the whole FFA leadership on this expansion debate. Look, they didn't really want it. They didn't really, go looking for it. I guess the sport itself, the grassroots, the NPL, everyone around the game outside the A-League has forced the FFA to deal with it. At the moment, with their negotiations for the television deal, it probably suits them to have a debate about expansion, because it shows broadcasters there's enthusiasm for a bigger league. That helps them. But, you know, short to medium term, I'm not sure how enthused the FFA are about expansion. And that's what we keep sort of, getting from them in terms of a message.
How could they not be enthused about
it? Yes, slow it down. Let's have a process. Let's talk about this. It's just so laborious. You just wonder whether they're motivated at all to expand the league.
Yeah, I just don't understand that. I really don't. There is so much goodwill and passion amongst the traditional football stakeholders that are looking to get re-engaged and involved. It needs to be embraced.
Yeah, of course it does. And the opportunity lost is massive, as we know. And, sooner or later, there's going to be a tipping point in this. So we know the owners are agitating for greater say in the running of the A-League. And maybe when they get what they want, which I think they'll have to, as we know, FIFA have been to town and they've sort of had words to the FFA about all this. Maybe when the owners get involved, we'll see a different type of agenda. But the one thing that the FFA keeps saying is, we want all our ducks in a row financially with the A-League. We want the current league to be viable, etc. There will never be an hour in a day when every single A-League club is in profit. That will never happen. It just won't happen. It doesn't happen anywhere else in the world. It won't happen here, so if they're waiting for that perfect day, we'll be waiting forever.
Exactly right, unless some Chinese money happens to arrive in Australia, as we've explored in the past, and will later on in this show when we talk about the Asian Champions League, some of the dough that's been splashed around China these days would certainly be welcome in Australia.
Yeah, it would be, and I think we know that there are some Chinese investors around a couple of these bids outside the A-League as well, which is a good thing, because we know that the money from Asia is the game changer for our clubs in Australia.
Yeah, it sure is. And with the top five of the top 10 players in the world playing in China right now, it's a portent for the future. Thanks again for coming on the show, Michael. Merry Christmas to you, mate.
Same to you guys, and Happy New Year.
Excellent.
Keep up the good work.
Thanks, mate. Stick around after the news, 442, Singapore's Paul Williams to talk to us about the Asian Champions League draw. Then Dean returns with a look at everything else that's going on in Europe. That's all coming up on Box to Box.
Now, this is Box to Box with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley.
Oh, what a goal!
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
They're just around the corner.
Absolutely fantastic!
Welcome back to Box to Box. We'll get into second edition football news shortly. Before we talk to Paul Williams from the World Game and 442 about this week's Asian Champions League draw, and Dino back with the international wrap first edition news. But before we do get into first edition news, I've got some breaking news. Second edition news, of course. Thank you. We're back to our original time slot. The week
we're
after
back
next.
To our home slot, don't
yeah,
we?
Our home slot. O'clock. Yeah, yeah. We've been broadcasting the program on Friday evenings at 6 o'clock for the last couple of months, but we'll be moving back to the 5 o'clock slot, which we far prefer for our listeners.
Absolutely, for those listeners on a Friday night heading to the game, they like to hear us, you know, in plenty of time before they have to get out of the car and wander in. They love Mark's work in news, and they'll be able to hear him an hour earlier.
Okay, so that's the week after next. So next week, 6 o'clock, and then from there.
They say to me a lot, we love Mark Van Aken. They say we love Mark Van Aken.
He's got groupies.
When they did change the time slot on us, they just went, what can you do?
What can you do?
Shall we get into the news, boys?
Thank you, Mehmet.
Socceroo teammates, Jackson.
Just before we do that, I want to ask whether Rob's been studying.
Studying what?
I want to ask whether he's been studying. We've got Paul Williams to talk about all the Asian Champions League
now,
matches.
We'll point out too, Paul.
I just wonder whether Rob's been studying how to say the club names.
Isn't this ironic that the bloke who has struggles with pronunciations has a crack
at me. And staying still in his chair, apparently.
Still in his chair, turning up on time. I'm just gobsmacked. That's
all
what
right.
I am.
Airing a bit of dirty laundry here. hey, Paul, just for your... He's an Asian football expert. He runs a Twitter place called The Asian Football Feast.
Why are you telling me this?
Because he's Australian-based, though. Yeah, so he writes for 442 Singapore.
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
Okay.
Thank you.
I thought you said he was in Singapore before.
No, I said...
I misheard
Singapore.
You.
Yeah, for the draw.
All right, let's get on to something productive here. Socceroo teammates Jackson Irvine and Aaron Moy went head-to-head this week in the championship as Huddersfield Town came away with a 1-0 win over Burton Albion at Pirelli Stadium. Both Socceroos managed 90 minutes as Moy's Terriers recorded their 11th win of the season and now sit fourth in the championship, while Irvine's Brewers are narrowly avoiding the relegation zone at 21st after an 85th-minute strike by Naki Wells. It's good to see Moisey get a win because they started the season on fire and they've been absolutely struggling of late. Mm. Even his form has been a little bit down, but he seems to be getting... In fact, he's man of the match last week as well.
But great to see Jackson get the armband as well for that game. He's really rising up the charts as one of the hottest properties in the championship, isn't he? You just wonder how long it's going to be before a Premier League team takes a look at him. You think so? Hey, I'm biased. So I'm good friend of his mum and
mate,
family.
Look at the numbers.
We're in love with Jackson Irvine. I tell you what, if Manchester City don't sign him and play him in the January transfer window, something's very wrong.
But Man City, you're not allowed to then loan him back to Melbourne City, okay?
Absolutely.
Right. Hey.
Just on the championship, I mean, games come thick and fast at this time of year. I really challenge any Australian football fan to try and keep up with the table and the games. But it's really important, and... any player that performs well over the next 6 weeks in the championship really does earn their money because they effectively play, I think it's a game every 3 days, pretty much.
Yeah,
so it's exciting stuff.
Yeah, good.
There we go. Now, this is one that Dino's touched on in the last couple of weeks. More than 1,700 calls have now been made to a hotline set up in the wake of claims of sexual abuse in football in England. The NSPC has said, that's the body setting up to look after all this. The line supported by the FA was set up after ex-Crewe Alexander player Woodward revealed he had been a victim of sexual abuse as a young footballer. The NSPCC said 75% of calls that resulted in a referral to police or other agencies, and they came from abuse victims. Police have so far identified 83 potential suspects. Not good.
Well, as Dino says, it seems like that, unfortunately, is almost the tip of the iceberg. That story is just going to get bigger and bigger. And we just wonder whether it's going to ripple around the world to other leagues. Is there a story sitting below the surface somewhere in Europe?
No, I doubt it's isolated to England. Correct.
Yeah. Well, it is...
UK.
Yeah, well, when you watch that movie, I think we did refer to this on the show last week or the week before about the Boston... sex abuse in the Catholic Church. When you see that movie and watch the trailer and look at the amount of countries around the world that had similar sexual abuse scandals, it suggests that it is going to get bigger.
Yeah, it's not a good thing. Anyway, they're at least finally finding these guys and
bringing
them to justice.
I just hope in all of this discussion, I say every week, every time it's raised, I just hope through this process the victims have the ability to move on with their lives. Very, very important because it's it's something that casts a shadow over our game at the moment.
No, dead set. You speak for all of us when you say that, Edge.
Now, Bruce Jittay believes a greater understanding of training expectations and his family joining him in South Korea will spark a successful second season with Suwon FC. With the 2016 K-League season having finished in November, Jittay is back in Australia and looking forward to his second campaign over there in South Korea. Suwon were relegated, so this is what's actually prompted a bit of discussion. Mm. Would he come home in January? That transfer window opens. Adelaide United desperately need him back, basically, if they're having any chance of a...
No chance, they're finished.
Yeah, I know, but if they've got any chance, they need to bring someone in. There's also a couple of other clubs on the hunt for strikers. The Western Sydney Wanderers, for one, for example, desperately need a striker. Even Newcastle are looking about at the moment. So, yeah, look, this is interesting. It's also interesting he says training expectations. With all due respect, Bruce, you've been a pro for a decade. What do you think the expectations are in training? Anyway.
Hey, can I ask Mark a question without notice?
No.
Have we got time to do that?
Yeah, plenty of time. Sure. I don't want to put him on the spot.
We obviously don't have you in our A-League segment, but I'm just interested to see what your opinion is about the derby in Melbourne this week and how you feel that event is bubbling along as a place in Melbourne's calendar, and in particular this Christmas derby. Have you got any views on whether the timing of it's too close to Christmas or a good or bad thing?
Yeah, look, I don't know. It doesn't seem to have a lot of traction at the moment.
Yeah.
And what's been interesting, a lot of the metrics in the A-League are up at the moment. The ratings are up. The crowds are up across the board. Victories aren't, though. Victories really struggling. Well, then, it used to be a Latter Mazaire that they get 20K plus to a game. They basically never break the 20K barrier anymore. So I don't know what's going on there. They've got a lot of members that just don't turn up to games. And
yeah, well, we do know what's going on there, and I disagree with you on the traction. I mentioned in the first hour when we talked to Dean that the tickets are hot right now.
They're always going to be hot at AAMI.
Yeah, exactly. But the issue, as we know, is the fans that still are railing against the establishment.
That's part of it. That's not all of it, though.
Well, it seems to take a couple of thousand off the crowd, and it certainly takes the edge off the atmosphere every week.
Definitely. So that's absolutely. Anyway, look, I think it's interesting because Victory need to win this game because otherwise they're very much in danger of becoming City's little brother, and which is hard to believe. But I know off the field, if they get beaten three times
City's
in 3 months, on the field, they're nowhere near it. You know, they're absolutely flying Melbourne City. And I've got to say, John Van Skip, who I've criticised for just being such a shrinking violet, vanilla-flavoured sort of presence in the A-League, has really come out firing in the last couple of weeks and put it on the agenda. And I've got to say, again, and I'm no particularly large Melbourne City fan, as you guys know, but that FFA Cup night, I just got a feeling that night that they'd arrived, that they'd finally arrived. Mm. They've still got a long way to go because their crowd numbers are not up to it, not up to scratch. I mean, put it in perspective, they get 7,000 or 8,000 people to a game. When we started this league 12 years ago, the minimum standard was 10K. And we're here 12 years later, and they're getting 8 in a city of 4.5 million people.
Yeah, well, we've been banging on about that for ages.
Well, I certainly have. If only there was another club they could bring in from Melbourne that would actually draw crowds.
Hmm.
Where would arouse some passion. From?
Oh, that PR campaign.
Probably from Dandenong. Casey Dandenong, something like that.
I think Hume City might be the dark horse there.
Hume City.
Melbourne's northern suburbs.
But unfortunately for Dean Hennessy, Hume said they're lining up a all-star Turkish coach to come in and coach the team. So he'll keep the NPL gig. There we go.
All right, good stuff, Mark.
They're going to recruit Aziz Beach.
That's it.
Next up, 442's Paul Williams. We're going to talk Asian Champions League on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
They're just around the corner.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
This is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. Now, the Asian Champions League group stages are about 6 weeks away. And this week, the draw was handed out. And Western Sydney and Adelaide are both in tough groups. To talk us through at the World Game and 442 Singapore, Paul Williams. Good to have you on the show, Paul.
It's good to be here, guys. How are you going?
Good, mate. Good. Is that a fair description? They both got a tricky road to negotiate, and both teams are in pretty poor form in the domestic league.
Yeah, they are, and it's not going to get much easier when the Champions League actually begins. You are right. They've been drawn in two very tough groups. Adelaide particularly, I would almost classify Adelaide's group as probably the toughest.
The group of death.
And the eastern side of the draw. So they've certainly been dealt no favours there. They've got Jeonbuk, who are the defending champions, Jiangsu Suning, who are a rising power in Chinese football, spent a lot of money over the last 12 months, and then they'll also have a J-League team, which will either be Kawasaki Frontale or their arch nemesis Gamba Osaka, who obviously beat them in that final in 2008. So, yeah, it's a very tough draw for Adelaide.
And the Wanderers?
Wanderers, yeah. Well, they've got FC Seoul, who they beat on the way to their title in 2014, but this is a different FC Seoul now. They've got a new coach. They're a lot more attack-minded, whereas back then they were they'd lost some of their best attacking talent. So they're more defensive-minded. They made the semi-final this year, unlucky not to make the final. They've also drawn a Japanese club who'll be the winners of the Emperor's Cup, so we won't know that until New Year's Day. And assuming they get through qualifying, they've also got Shanghai SIPG, who has made international headlines in the last couple of days for their $60 million capture of Oscar from Chelsea.
Mate, this is brutal by the sound of it. It doesn't look like there's a great deal of hope for the Wanderers or the Reds.
Yeah, it's going to be very difficult. I'm struggling to see, unless there's a major turnaround in form, how either of them can make it out of the group without wanting to sound too negative about it. I mean, the Wanderers' form this season isn't great, and their defence, we've seen time and time again, defensive mistakes have cost them. And when you're coming up an attack against an attack that's got the likes of Oscar, Alkerson, Hulk, Wule, these are incredible attacking talent. And we've seen this year how brutal that Wanderers' defence can be. And Adelaide are just all over the shop as well at this stage of the season. And they're going to come up against some really strong teams. So it's going to be very, very difficult for them.
Paul, you're an Asian football expert. I've been reading and listening to the English press who have been bleating about losing players from the Premier League to the Chinese Super League, which in itself is a bit of an irony. But what can you tell us about the rise of the financial power of Chinese clubs? And is it a temporary phenomenon, or is it just... is the market going to be set by some of these transactions that are happening at the moment?
I think it's kind of set that way now for probably the short term future anyway. That's the multi-million dollar question: is this sustainable in the long term? Is it going to last, or is it sort of a flash in the pan that will die out after a couple of years? And I guess no one really knows the answer to that question yet. This has been building up for quite some time. Guangzhou Evergrande were the first club to really go down this path. When the Evergrande group bought Guangzhou back in 2010, they invested heavily, made Dario Conker the third highest paid player in the world. But no one really took it all that seriously at the time. It's only in the last probably 12 to 18 months when a lot of other clubs have tried to follow that model. And we've seen Shanghai Shenhua and SIPG and Jiangsu and Beijing and Shandong all invest, tens of millions of dollars to bring in these high-profile players. And it's really shaken up the landscape. I think, five of the 10 highest-paid players in the world now play in China. And I think we're going to see more of that. When players get offered the chance to, get paid six, seven, eight times what they're getting paid in Europe... while they might be going for the money, it's hard to turn down that type of money. And China's hoping that investment will pay off long term with a better competition.
This is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. We're talking to the World Game and 442 Singapore's Paul Williams about the Asian Champions League and Asian football, in particular China in general. And a question I've got for you, off the back of what you've just said is, in England, we've seen the obvious growth of the Premier League and the influx of international players playing in that competition over the years, so much so that young English players struggle to get a chance. And this is coming from a country with the ultimate of footballing pedigrees. How does this affect China's growth from a national side point of view? Because if you correlate that same argument into China and you're bringing all of these talent in, are they improving the locals, or are they stopping opportunities for locals to play the game?
Well, the good thing about China and Asia in general is it limits the amount of foreigners you can actually have it in any one team. So, the foreign quota in China is 4+1 and 3+1 on the pitch at any one time. So you're only allowed to have, four out of your 11 players be foreigners. So that means in any side there's going to be seven local players that are on the pitch. So that's a good thing, I think, is that it guarantees that there's going to be chances for the local players to get out on the pitch and prove themselves. And we're not going to see what we have seen in England, where teams just become overrun with foreigners and you put out an all-foreign 11. You know, that's not going to happen in China. They've got that 4+1 policy. So the idea of this is that, you know, these professionals come in, bring their experience from Europe or South America and help grow that culture within the dressing rooms at these clubs, and that influence then rubs off on the local players in 5-10 years time. You know, they've got that level of professionalism as well.
Paul, the great thing about the Champions League, from my perspective, is the Western group, because it introduces Australian football fans to clubs that we don't really know much about. Some of these Iranian clubs in the Western group, can you pick a couple of those and just give us a bit of an indication? How strong is Iranian club football? It's sort of been behind the curtain a little bit, but some of these clubs are pretty big clubs, aren't they?
There's two clubs in the competition this year that are called Esteghlal, which is probably going to get a little bit confusing. There's just the original Esteghlal, and then there's Esteghlal Khuzestan, which is a fantastic story. They're almost the Leicester City of Iranian football. They're a small club that came from nowhere to win the title last year. It's a fantastic story. The original Esteghlal and Persepolis, the Tehran Derby is up there with any of the derbies you're going to find anywhere around the world. Gets 100,000 to every match. So when these two teams play, providing the authorities allow it, there'll be a full house every time. There'll be 100,000 in the Azadi Stadium whenever these two teams play their Champions League matches. And I think Persepolis has been drawn with Al Hilal, and you know those two teams have a little bit of history as well. Played in the round of 16 a couple of years ago in a spicy encounter as well. So, you know, when these two teams meet, and it's going to be interesting. The sad thing is that because of the political tension that exists between Saudi Arabia and Iran, matches between Saudi clubs and Iranian clubs have to be played in neutral venues, which sort of takes away from it a little bit. You lose that experience of 100,000 at the Azadi Stadium or 50,000 in Riyadh when Al Hilal plays.
So. Yeah, that's no good, Paul. Sorry to have to wrap you up there, mate. It's been a great segment talking to you about the Asian Champions League, but we do press for time, mate. So thank you for coming on the show, Paul. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Anytime, guys. Have a good day.
Dino next with his European wrap.
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
They're just around the corner.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, this is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport on digital radio, streaming on any kind of app you like, whether it's TuneIn Radio, whether it's radio app. There's a stack of them out there. We all know that. And the podcast, of course, on box2boxnts.com.au. It's time to talk Europe with Dino. But before we do, Dino, how much do you love going to mega shopping centres?
Hang on, I've got something to say about Chemist Warehouse first. I've got to say, I live in Carnegie. Dino knows that I live in Carnegie, and not far from East
For those around Australia, beautiful suburb within Melbourne, where
Turak.
No, I don't live in Turak.
But anyway, so Chemist, there's a bit of Skyrail action happening where I live. So there's it's a bit like a construction site. Everyone's looking forward to the Skyrail. Thank you, Daniel Andrews, for not putting it under the road like everybody else wanted it. But we'll take it anyway. But what's really interesting is Chemist Warehouse have opened a second shop in Coonang Road, Carnegie. So they've got every corner of Skyrail covered. And do you know why they've done it? It's because there's 3,000 people controlling the traffic in and out of these construction sites, and they all need sunscreen.
Absolutely.
And they have to go to Chemist Warehouse to get it.
The interesting thing as well, I mean, I don't know if you can smell it from here, though, but the aftershave that Edge is wearing now, I'm actually sitting on his lap, it's that good.
I think it might be the Calvin Klein Eternity for Men, just 100 mils for $26.99, which you can buy for Christmas and smell just like Edge.
Either of the Coonang Road Carnegie shops, one at one end of the street and the other at the other.
Or anyone around Australia. Issey Miyake for women, 100 mils. Only $59.99. Paco Rabanne, 1 million. 100 mils, $69.99. Katy Perry, Mad Potion, or Meow. That's how you pronounce it. 100 mils, $17.99. Calvin Klein, CK, Into You, for him or her, $24.99. Mark Jacobs Daisy, 100 mils, $69.99. There will be no airing of grievances this Christmas for the family if you get into Chemist Warehouse and leave a little beauty under the tree for your loved one. The real House of Fragrances this Christmas, open early till late, is
Chemist Warehouse.
Thank you, gentlemen. Okay, football in Europe. You are coming in off the long run, Dino, because you were a very cranky man when you walked into the studio, and for good reason.
I am, actually,
but I won't touch on it yet, but I want to go to the Championship, which I think is most probably the most intriguing league in the world, but I'm really, really disappointed about how they're going about their business. But we'll start off with Champions League.
Coach sacking-wise,
Champions League, obviously, we're getting to the pointy end now. It's down to the last 16, and the draw's just come out, so I thought, for our listeners, Manchester City, Monaco, interesting draw. Real Madrid, Napoli, Benfica, Borussia Dortmund. Then it's Bayern Munich versus Arsenal again. I think that's three out of the last four years for
which is the home league. Do we know the home?
Yeah, we do actually. Man City at home to Monaco. First leg.
Yeah. What about Bayern Munich and Arsenal?
Arsenal away, which I think is quite a good game.
Makes a big difference.
Yeah, I think it makes a big difference. FC Porto, Juventus. So I'll say, obviously the first team I name is the home team. Bayern Leverkusen against Atletico Madrid. Interesting where Atletico Madrid are in the league. So they need to actually do a little bit in this competition because they are struggling. Then we've got Paris Saint-Germain against Barcelona, which should be a cracker. And then you've got, which I actually think is not a bad draw, Seville, even though they are the Europa champions, they're playing Leicester. So I think
Leicester's got a big chance, yeah.
Yeah, I do as well. So that's the Champions League. And I think when we're talking Champions League, we're talking Europe. Ronaldo, I mean, how good is the boy?
And these champions, I mean, the group games are now complete. Obviously, we're into the home and away league knockout phase. They are very exciting, and they are a lot more strategic than you think, because when you look at these games, there's the away goals rule comes in, but also their league campaigns and league schedules become a factor. Resting players, playing players.
And that's where the big clubs have big squads and they have the ability to massage.
I love the away goals rule. I think it's awesome.
Yeah, I do as well. It's very strategic.
And you mentioned Cristiano Ronaldo winning Ballon d'Or.
Fifth time.
And now
it's getting a bit boring, isn't it?
I heard a piece of useless information. Do you know how his father came up with the Ronaldo in his name?
No.
His favourite actor was apparently Ronald Reagan. That's apparently. So do a little bit of research and find out. I only just picked it up listening to some media during the week. Yeah, that's apparently true. So, and I can use apparently one more time in the same sentence. It'll be a world record.
Now, what I thought we would do now, we'll just have a quick run round the European leagues, certainly the top one. So at the moment, we'll stay with Spain, with Ronaldo. Real Madrid are top, 37 points. Actually, 6 points ahead of Barcelona, which is interesting. Sevilla, as we talk about them, with playing Leicester in the Champions League, they're only 1 point behind Barcelona. And then bringing out the top four is Villarreal. So, for me,
Barcelona got some work to do.
They've got a lot of work to do, Edge. Then we go to the German league, the Bundesliga.
This is the one that's interesting, because start off with who's second, Dino, in the Bundesliga.
Leipzig. I mean, that is a long time between drinks. They were a team like when I was a kid that weren't bad, and we used to. Oh yeah, no, I've heard of them. But I mean, I've not heard of them for years now. But now, obviously
in the older East Germany, which is,
well, they are pushing. They are pushing Bayern Munich right to the hilt at the moment.
They have run out a bit of steam recently.
They have.
But they had an awesome start.
Two points. I mean, that's all it is. And then obviously Hertha Berlin.
And obviously Bayern Munich on top. But interestingly,
there's some big clubs.
Borussia
Dortmund. Yeah.
Sixth.
I know, and Borussia Dortmund, Bayern Leverkusen, eighth. I mean, some really big, Schalke, 10th,
which is a big club.
I mean,
it's an interesting German league this year.
And they're about to go into their winter break,
They are, and then we've got Serie A, obviously Juventus restoring order as normal, but again, Roma pushing them 4 points behind, AC Milan within touching distance, but I mean, it's still a 7-point gap between first and third, and the top four rounded out with Napoli and Lazio only on goal difference.
What's on my bucket list? Roma versus Lazio at the Olympic Stadium is on my bucket list. We've got to do that, Dean.
Yeah, we should.
That's one we haven't done.
We haven't done that one. No,
you just
want
to go there so you can rip a flare.
And then finally, we'll just finish off quickly with the French league. I would say Nice, but it's obviously nice to be top of the league.
Nice.
Yeah, so It is actually. Monaco as well, and Paris, PSG.
Mm. I'll tell you what, I've been to Monaco Stadium, which is just architecturally melts into the wall of the city that is Monaco. It's just beautiful.
They're good this year, though.
It's good to see this continental Europe competition. It's been a while since there's been competition for top spot, and every single one of them, you know, there's genuine rivalry.
Now, before we get onto the Championship, let's just quickly touch on the Premier League. I mean, games are coming, as Edge mentioned earlier in the segment.
Thick and fast.
Thick and fast. I mean, Big week during the week. It's game after game after game. But the one team that is doing really well is Chelsea.
Yeah, and 6 points clear, top
Conte's,
of the table.
Conte's settled in.
And you know,
football.
During the week, I mean, these midweek games are hard for us Australians to really keep up with what's going on. But he got kicked from pillar to post, and he's on been on 4 yellow cards for, I think, 7 weeks now. And so he's been absolutely kicked, Conte, and he just keeps delivering. He is a machine.
Look, it is.
He's a machine.
It's really, really tight as well. You know, you look at Liverpool, Arsenal and Manchester City, and then Tottenham are in most probably touching distance with only 3 points away. But the interesting thing is Manchester United have picked up 6 points in this little window of games. So if they can continue
they just
that,
snuck that one at Selhurst Park, though, the other day.
Yeah, they do.
But a win's a win.
A win's a win, and 3 points are 3 points. And Jose will make sure that you know that, Rob, you know that. Nice. But I think the pointy end of the league, if you look at the games coming up this weekend, which I think we should look at, is Everton Arsenal. It's obviously very, very big.
Monday night.
Yeah, very, very big. I think also Crystal Palace. Sorry, we talked about Crystal Palace getting beat to Man United. They're a bit up and down, Crystal Palace. One week they're good, and then the next they struggle. But I think if you look at the major draw, like for this week, this is where. For me,
well, you got the Merseyside derby.
Well, that's always big. I mean, that's one of the best derbies in the world. You know, Everton and Liverpool. But for me, I mean, I think Chelsea at the moment are setting the bar, and I think if they can get a result this weekend, all of a sudden, then and results go maybe their way with Liverpool in second, say a draw, and they gain an extra 2 points. I think it could be quite significant going into the Christmas rush because, as you say, there's games coming galore in that,
well,
that
Dino,
period.
Let's talk about the Championship. Before we talk about the table and the games, what's going on with the coaches in the Championship?
Well, look, I love the Championship. Obviously, my dad played for 3 clubs that are in the Championship now, but when he played, they were all in the top league, which was the old First Division, which is now the Premier League. So, you know, the Birmingham Cities, the Nottingham Forest, and the Derby County.
He played for those 3 clubs.
Exactly. And for me, all of those 3 are in the Championship, so I'm always keen to see how all the 3 teams go. But really what disturbed me this week is a boy that we know, and what you might not know, Edge, and I've never told you this, that once upon a time, the Heidelberg-Alexander job was up for grabs. Mm. And I actually spoke to Gary Rowett about getting him the job. And I was actually going to put his name forward for the Heidelberg job. So that's
George Gitakis.
But to set up what you're going to say...
That was before Georgie Boy was there. Yeah.
But to set up what you're going to say, there's a lovely little piece from the BBC that you've given us, Dino, by way of background, with Gary Rowett's departure from Birmingham City. In just over 2 years, he took an inexpensively assembled squad to 2 top half finishes in the Championship and had them on the verge of the playoffs with the potential of money to spend in January. So it's the Chinese owner's Trillion Trophy Asia who talked about stability and continuity, then give him the Tijuana.
And that's where I'm worried. I'm worried about, not just for Gary Rowett. I mean, Gary Rowett, for me, was always going to be a decent manager. He was a good footballer, lovely bloke, done a great job. I watched them in the game against Villa in the derby, and you know the fans were passionate. I've seen all of the feedback on social media, and people are absolutely disgusted with this decision. I mean, this is a man that's had nothing but really, really good results based on a very, very limited budget, and yet right in touching distance. I mean, I'm talking touching distance. Mm-hmm. I mean, 2 wins and they could be, you know, 3rd or 4th. And all of a sudden, you get the sack because, for me, it's all about the name, Gianfranco Zola. Great player. Mm. Has he done really much as a manager? Not really. Mm. And it's just because of the name. And it just does my head in because Gary Rowett's not known. And obviously Gianfranco Zola is a world name. And it just does my head in. Just because they've got a name doesn't mean they're a great manager. He's proven he's a good manager. He's done it at Burton Albion.
Yep.
He's done it, obviously, at Birmingham City. And then he gets a sack. And I know the Birmingham fans better than most. They will. I've seen the social media and they are absolutely fuming with this.
Well, I mean, this, I know this is close to your heart, but the Birmingham City is a club in the city of Birmingham, obviously England's second largest metropolis. West Bromwich Albion, Aston Villa and Birmingham City are the big three brands in the club. Now, Birmingham City is a very big club. A lot of people in Australia wouldn't realise how big that club is and how significant it is.
Potentially, they could be the biggest.
That's right. And how significant that club is to that part of England.
I mean, in the old days, they were getting 50,000
right.
a week.
Yeah.
In the 60s, they were getting 50,000 every week.
It's a big club, so a lot of people support them. Villa, in recent times, have probably overshadowed
them.
They
have, without doubt.
But for me, the fans know their football, and they know that this guy has done a good job with limited resources. And the ownership, you know, back to Carson Young, the guy from Hong Kong who said he was going to capitalise the club, never did. He passed the club on. It ends up in this Chinese trillionaire's hands. And, I mean, it does smack of them just thinking that they can get in the Premier League.
What was interesting? Without hard work. What was interesting when I actually tried to research this? There was actually a website called SAC. So I actually looked at it, and then all of a sudden, 25 managers have gone.
Yeah,
you know, of which at least over 10 are in the Championship, and it's just. I think it's because of the money that's in the game. We know that the big final when they have the playoff is always massive and it's like £100 million game. And I think that's every time they get a couple of bad results, they're out the door.
Right. Give us your analysis now, mate. We've certainly got the point and we agree with you on that. But let's talk a little bit about the competition. Give us 30 seconds on it, mate.
Well, look, my team, my team is Derby County and we've won 7 in a row. So just a cheeky 7 under Mr. McLaren. And,
risen to fifth.
But you know, the funny thing is, in midweek, when the midweek games were on, they were in fifth, went to 10th, and then went back to fifth with a win. That's how close it is. There's 6 points from 14th all the way to fourth. So it's a really, really tough league to get out of. The games come fast and furious. There's most games in, for me, I think it's the best league in the world.
Look at it. I'm going to, from number five on the Derby County's fifth.
Yeah.
Leeds United sixth. Sheffield Wednesday seventh. Birmingham City eighth. Norwich City ninth. Fulham 10th. Preston North End 11th.
Okay.
Barnsley 12th. I mean, gentlemen, Aston Villa 13th. Look at those names.
Massive.
Turn off your engines. That's enough because we still need some time for stoppage time. And Marco, Dean, why don't you stick around for stoppage time? We'll have a bit of a yarn then.
That'll be good fun.
That's next on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And Storage King.
They're just around the corner.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, this is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. The fourth official signals there's around 9 minutes left in stoppage time. Dino's back in with us. Now, gentlemen, I want to tell you something because in January...
Fire away, Rob.
In January, this is the time to store, right? With Storage King, our mates at Storage King. They're the kings of storage, moving and more. Call 1-800-STORAGE to find your nearest store or just get onto storageking.com.au because in January, the first 20 new customers will get 1 month's free storage, right? So that's a month's free storage. The first 20 customers to every Storage King around the country. Some conditions do apply, so you'll need to get into your local store or give them a call to find out a little bit more about this deal. But this is just one of the ripping deals because people are moving, they're downsizing, they're getting prepared to sell, their businesses change, and they think, where the hell am I going to put all this stuff? I'm telling you where to put it. You put it at Storage King. It's affordable, and this deal is just an absolute cracking one, Dino.
Yeah, I like Storage King. I've worked with them before, and I've always got plenty of rubbish that I have to store from time to time.
And plenty of soccer balls. It's all those ex-uniforms you've got because you've coached so many teams.
Well, that's right, and played for so many teams as well.
Yeah. It's, well done.
He's been through more clubs than Slim Dusty.
Love it. The more stations than the Southern Aurora, some people on radio these days. But the Storage King offer for month three for the first 20 customers in January. Get in, take advantage of it. All thanks to our mates at the King of Storage. Dino, now you're here with us because you've got a couple of observations on coaching that you wanted to extend a little.
Well, if we're talking around the academy, you know, that type of approach. I mean, when Ernie Merrick was obviously, you know, the Wellington Phoenix's coach, who's obviously no longer there and resigned just last week. But when Ernie was at the VIS, I was pretty disappointed coming towards the end of my playing career, going into potentially a coaching career, of the talent that was coming through the institutes and what they didn't know, as opposed to what they did know. And having been brought up in Britain and grew up, and I actually thought I was a little bit more rounded because of the education I'd had as a young lad going through the system. That doesn't mean you're going to make a footballer. It just means you're more rounded. You've got all the information. And I looked at the situation and I was disappointed with the number of young boys coming in and not really understanding what they were supposed to do. So we researched around the world, went for about nearly 18 months around the world, looking at different academies all around Europe to get some really idea of how they were working then in the late 90s, which then became early 2000s. And we started our own academy up with Derby. Now, ours was all for free because we had a sponsor, which was Derby County, which at that stage was a Premier League team. And my basis was, didn't trial anyone. It most probably cost me my first marriage because I used to go out every weekend looking at players in their own environment to see how good they were at 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 years old. And that's what we brought to the table. And from there, I mean, and, you know, we've got some people in the room next to us that have been involved in similar projects. And for me, there's like everywhere you turn, there's academy on a street corner. Even the NPL is like every club's got an academy. And
it rolls into that conversation we had with Ron Honig last week. We got a lot of feedback from that chat. You know, it came up from his call for a parliamentary inquiry into children's soccer, as it's described, the scandalous exploitation of local children and their parents, paying fees of up to $1,100 and more, from some of the feedback I've had, it's something that is becoming a monster that will at some point prevent some young children from playing, because these academies have got their paid staff, profitable or for-profit enterprises running them, are going to shut some kids out of playing the game.
No, I understand that. I mean, we did it for non-profit. We did it because we were trying to produce a footballer. I mean, obviously, we ended up with James Meredith, who obviously we've had on the show, you know, played for Australia eventually, but he was the one that Derby took. Lee Broxham was so close. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, Melbourne Victory's Lee Broxham. Very, very close. Mm-hmm. As were a few players along the journey. But what I'm saying is, really, education, I'm not saying it should be for free, but some of the fees that we all have to pay or we have to endure, it's wrong. I mean, I wouldn't want my children, and I've got two lads who play football, I wouldn't want to be paying $2,000 for each of them and shelling out $4,000 every single year for their education in football. I mean, it didn't cost me nothing when I was a kid. And
I think that you hit the nail on the head. I was sort of doing listening to what's been going on here, and I'm a bit conflicted on this issue because I saw your great work, Dean, during those times, and you and Richard Rudsky and the rest of the team should be congratulated. There was one very big difference about what you guys were doing and what's happening now, is that, as you said, it wasn't fee for service. It was funded by the club, Derby County, and you guys handpicked the best talent. And you then gave them an opportunity and assisted them in their development of their careers, and gave them, in many cases, and I can say this because I observed it, a career path that they wouldn't have necessarily had in the normal club structure. And I think it really has been the model for this type of program going forward. What I feel a little bit uncomfortable about, and Mark's sitting over there, but I think there is too many fly-by-nighters who put together a glorified coaching program and call it an elite academy, which people, unsuspecting, good-natured parents who want to give their kids an opportunity, get taken advantage of. And that's probably what Ron Honig was on about last week. And I think the authorities in the game, the development people at all the federations have probably let this get right away from everything. And
yeah, but hang on. You're right, but how do they stop
hang
it?
Hang on, you're right.
No, you're right, but how do you stop? The federations can't stop it. It's commerce. So then the reality is, what part of the bee in Ron's bonnet was that, you know, there was a club in the eastern suburbs of Sydney, which is hardly a unwealthy area, but I might add, but that was running. They had two streams. They had just the normal run of the mill, you know, pay you $100 and come along and you get your dad coaching your kids, and they had the elite stream with proper trained coaches. Now, again, it's up to you've got to get out there.
Well, you know all about this. I mean, yeah. declare your interest because you know what.
Well, I have run an academy, which is. Well, hopefully, in the process of being wound up, not because it wasn't a good program. There's just some issues that we won't go into at this time. But
just availability of coaches.
And look, with our coaches, we had Arthur Pappas, a pro licensed coach. We had Sean Ontong, doesn't really have great credentials, but was Women's Premier League Coach of the Year a couple of years ago, which I'm glad he got because at the time when we were starting it. Who was just sort of hanging it all on his being a young Socceroos skipper. And Peter Zoyce, who's been around the NPL and played at a high level in Holland. So, look, the quality of the coaching was good, and people loved the program. But it was relatively expensive. And what was most disturbing for me from this, holistically, most of our kids in the older group were already at an NPL club. So they're paying, we were charging upwards of about $375 a term. So it's about, let's call it $1,600 a year. So the parents are forking out $1,600 and they're already in an NPL club where they're already forking that out to be at the NPL club. My question is, and these, you know, most of the kids, most.
Can I jump in here?
What the hell? This is where these NPL clubs, they're taking the piss, aren't they? If we've got people coming to us because they feel they need more rounded extra training and they're already at what's supposed to be the highest level, that's a problem.
Well, I've been around the game a long time, as Dean has, and this is what Mark's described is really interesting because back in the NSL days, there wasn't this existence, but every NSL club had a youth program, didn't they?
And totally
they had a National Youth League club, so the talent that was in the young talent gravitated to those clubs and that youth league competition, and it was the talent pathway. Everyone had, you know, Mark Viduka's father was private coaching him, and I mean, every decent, most decent players had a private coach who was working on their technical capacities, and investing money in a private coach. So not so much the academies, but clubs very much were the home of the youth development programs.
And
they
now,
don't seem to be that way now.
And now those clubs do have their youth programs, but they're basically for profit.
Gentlemen.
They are for profit. Let me just jump in there.
Which is
they
ridiculous.
Are for profit, but again, we get charged $40,000 every single year.
Correct.
To get out of bed.
Yeah. That's
so
why,
like, so
that's
we
why
all
the
walk
authorities.
In the door, 32 clubs are paying $40,000 for
not
to
get
out of bed.
Not to mention the coach accreditation fees. That's where the authorities, they can't take all that money and not regulate the system.
And let me just add, just quickly, the competition itself.
Nothing gets done quickly.
The competition itself is not good enough. We're not going to produce the footballers we need to produce if you don't play competitive football week in, week out. And we don't play competitive football week in, week out. That's the facts at junior level. Yeah. Senior level, yeah, we do. But junior level, we don't. And until we fix that, we ain't going to produce what we used to produce in the old days.
And that was Dean Hennessy commenting. And you'll hear more of Dean Hennessy next week because he's going to be around over Christmas, and I'm not. I'm taking 3 weeks off, gentlemen.
And, you and me, Dino, baby.
So, Edge, Marco, Dino, steer the box-to-box ship steadily for the next 3 weeks.
While the cat's away, the mice will play.
We know all about that, gentlemen. So we got one more week of our 6 o'clock time slot next week, and then we go back to the 5 o'clock slot the week after, and I'll see you all in the new year.
Merry Christmas, Rob.
And Slim. Merry Christmas to you boys.
Merry Christmas,
and
guys.
And to all our listeners. It's been a great year on Box to Box, and we love your feedback. Thank you for your support to all our listeners. Thanks to our commercial partners, Chemist Warehouse and Storage King, Mario
Dino,
Tascone,
you've got to cut
Michael
his
Taylor
morning Turek while he's away on holidays,
right,
while he's going
yeah.
off
yeah.
to Europe for 3 weeks.
Yeah, well,
I've organised that.
Europe,
it's costing me about 100. Every lawn we'd cut is about 100.
Okay. Well done, guys. That's full time on Box to Box. Join us next week when we go from one end of the pitch to the other in the World Game.